Hello and welcome to Digital Careers Meets, part of Barton Rock's Digital Careers podcast, which offers insights and advice on advancing your digital career, as well as making your digital hiring more effective. And in today's show, we're going to be talking about embracing digital entrepreneurialism when hiring. Now, we've traveled virtually, of course, from my base in London to the other side of the world to be joined by Richard Spencer in Sydney, who is a digital entrepreneur who has moved out of corporate and into entrepreneurialism and then back again. Richard previously started a digital agency called Two Social, which he subsequently sold to iCentia, the intelligence and data technology company. So I hope you enjoy listening. So Rich, thanks very much for joining us today on Digital Careers. Great to have you involved.
Oh, pleasure. Thanks for having me, Guy.
So let's start with just a few minutes on you, because today's subject is all going to be about digital entrepreneurialism. So of course, I've picked a subject who has gone through this himself, and you are that individual. So do you want to just chat to the audience about what you've done previously, perhaps just very, very briefly on your corporate life and then moving into the entrepreneurial piece?
Yeah, pleasure. So I spent the first 10 years or so of my career in client side roles in traditional marketing communications roles and then into digital roles as digital became a thing. I'm old enough and I look like I'm old enough to have been working when the internet started to become a thing for the first time in the mid 90s. And we were creating the first websites for organizations, you know, what is 25 or so years ago now. So it feels like a really long time. So the first 10 years or so, in-house client side. Then I moved to Australia to do a global role out of Sydney, which is a bloody terrible idea. This is not the place to do a global role from. If you're going to pick the place to try and have conversations with other parts of the world in, Sydney's time zone is not the one to pick. So I wasn't here for the first 9 months or so of their first 12 months I was down here, and decided that wasn't really for me, which is when I went out on my own and effectively started a digital agency, which I then ran a couple of for 10 years or so. Sold the last one I owned and went back in-house on the back of the earnout from that, and have been back client-side for the last sort of 5 or 6 years in a variety of digital transformation and CX roles.
Yeah, and today we're going to be talking about the switch out of entrepreneurial into something potentially more corporate, in inverted commas. But before we get onto all of that, I'm interested to know why you chose to do the entrepreneurial thing. What was it within you that was the driving force for pressing the go button?
I think it's one of those things that you either have that itch to start your own business or you don't. Having spoken to a few people over the years who have had that, you've got to scratch it at some point in time. There's a point where you somewhere in your career where you get the opportunity to say, okay, now's the time to pull the trigger, and I'm gonna give it a go on my own, or I've come up with a great idea, or I've seen a particular niche or a particular gap. But I think ultimately, if you have that, if you have it in you, if you have a real desire and a burning desire to do something yourself, you've got to give it a go at some point in time, because you really don't want to be retiring in however many years time thinking, you know, I wish, or, you know, why didn't I, or surely I could have given that a go. That was one of the things that particularly drove me. But at the same time, the gap in the market we were seeing was that, you know, lots of organizations were starting to talk about digital transformation, not the way we mean it now, the way that businesses meant digital transformation in the early 2000s, which was still in many respects digitizing traditional marketing formats, and still in many cases, you know, building the first websites for organizations.
Yeah. So when people ask you that question, when is the right time, Rich, to strike out on my own? How do you answer that question?
It's actually one that isn't easy to answer, because it depends on a range of different circumstances, not least that starting a business is like having another baby in the house. So anybody listening who doesn't have a baby in the house, this is going to mean nothing at all. But if you've had one, or you've had more than one, starting a business is like having another one. It is an all-consuming passion. It wakes you up in the middle of the night for things you didn't even know you had to worry about. And if you don't have that kind of passion and drive for starting a business and running the business that you start, then it's probably not the right choice for you anyway. And again, I've spoken to a couple of people over the years who started it and realized it really wasn't for them quite quickly and went back into a corporate life. I think there are a couple of things. So there's lots of data, funnily enough, that would suggest that as economies come out of downturns, which most of the world's economies are in, more and more businesses are started. Largely, I guess, because the kind of economic safety net of a salary has been taken away from lots of people, who then think, you know, maybe now's the time. It's as good a time as any. So I think we'll probably see globally lots more businesses started over the next 6 to 9 months. The other really good time is when you think you've seen a gap, because those gaps can close really quickly. There are very short windows of opportunity normally to take advantages of opportunities you see in the market. And if you see one, that's probably the best time to go.
Yeah, and we share a similar vintage, obviously. So, you know, we're both experienced hands, although, of course, you look a good deal younger than I do. When people have asked me that question, the way I've tried to answer it is there's a certain amount of it that you just know when it's the right time. And that probably sounds like a very wishy-washy answer, but you have to feel it inside as well. You have to be willing to accept the compromises that are involved with starting your own business, as well as obviously all the upsides that come with it. So on that subject, what were the things that you experienced in the first year of starting your own gig? When you thought, you know, that sort of pre-startup world for you, when you were, you know, the safety net, as you say, of a paycheck coming in every month, and then moving into something where you're staring out there on your own and going, okay, well, this is it now. It's really happening. What were the things that you had to adjust to mentally, which would be a good tip for people thinking about this?
The big benefit, as you mentioned, is it's incredibly liberating as an experience because you are no longer beholden to that salary check coming in fortnightly or monthly or whatever your current pay cycle is. You are freed from that constraint. At the same time, you are also, you're out on your own. So you have to be well enough capitalized to understand that you're probably not going to get paid a salary by your business for some time. The last person to get paid is always the business owner, which is paradoxical in many respects because most people think you own a business there. Ipso facto, you must be a multimillionaire. That's clearly how that process works. But I think that for me, it is that thing that you are liberated to do the things you felt you could have done inside a corporate, but you were constrained to do. What you then find quite quickly is all of the things you didn't know. If you like, the functional capacities of running a business that most people in a functional environment in a large corporate never get to see. The basic stresses of having to have enough money in your bank account every month to hit a payroll when you start to employ 30, 40, 50, 60 people, if it's not quite there, is extraordinarily stressful. Some of the areas of taxation and double entry bookkeeping that the vast majority of people have no interest in, all of a sudden you have to learn. And it's those kind of things which kind of, if you like, drag a little bit on the passion, because the liberating impact of being out on your own is really driven and supported by the passion for whatever made you start this thing. The drag on that sometimes can be the day-to-day grind of running a business. So what you've got to do to continue to maintain the excitement, maintain the passion, is keep reminding yourself why you did it. For me, very specific, there was a very specific moment at my employer before I jumped out on my own where I was invited to a meeting to talk about the meeting before we had a meeting. And I could not constantly remind myself that level of pointless bureaucracy was one of the things that I was liberated from and then created more time in the day to do the things that were more exciting.
Yeah, unproductive hours, just dead time, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no question. The flip side is when having now gone back client side is you are a distinctly better executive having been a business owner because you have a much more rounded understanding of all of the different functional elements that are going to run the business and the pressures that are on your respective colleagues because you've had to be a jack of all trades, you know, not just the master of the one you are kind of employed to do functionally. And I think that helps you be an executive first and a functional specialist second. If you've actually had a wider overview of what it really entails in terms of running a business.
Well, let's move on to that. So obviously in my business, Digital Executive Search, it's all about convincing clients or influencing clients around certain types of profile. And I feel that there's almost an unconscious bias towards people that have a highly entrepreneurial background, especially if it's a bigger company that I'm hiring for. How do you think companies should consider and look at digital entrepreneurs as a possible contender on a shortlist for a role? It could be a chief marketing officer, it could be a chief digital officer, or someone at a lower level. What's your view, Rich?
I would concur with your view that larger organizations should prize that, absolutely. And in actual fact, should prize diversity in the resume from my perspective. So I always found working agency side that you could tell when you were working with a marketing manager or marketing director or CMO who'd had agency experience, they knew what they were asking you to do. It didn't stop them asking, but they knew what they were asking you to do. Equally, typically, we tended to find that agency suits were better and more rounded if they'd spent some time in-house. So that balance of understanding both sides of the coin, I think, was always brought something new to the table. Even if all you were doing as a client is apologizing when you were asking for too much from your agency because you knew you were asking for too much, the sense of better balance and understanding, I think, always made a more rounded approach to getting the job done. I think that would translate into digital entrepreneurship inside larger organizations, no question. Because the difference of approach and the different way of thinking and the ability to be more agile and more nimble in thinking, I think, is what big organizations can sometimes lack. What the digital entrepreneur, by contrast, would need to do is make sure that they were aware that they were stepping into something which is going to be naturally more bureaucratic because it has to have a different governance structure to the way a small business will operate. And you need to try and embrace that rather than fight against it. You need to continue to be less tolerant of mediocrity, which is quite often what entrepreneurs are. But you need to accept that you need to have a greater tolerance of bureaucracy inside a larger organization than maybe you would in a smaller, more entrepreneurial one.
So what you're saying there is that cultural fit, if you're the individual, cultural fit is a big consideration. Are you going to have a bit of a gear crunch, for want of a better term, when you onboard with this new company? You're going to have a holy cow type of moment where you sort of go, well, I thought it was going to be a bit faster than this. Because a lot of people that want to move from larger companies to smaller companies who are digital folks, quite often one of their reasons for wanting to leave bigger companies is the pace of digital change.
Yeah,
I want to move into, because by definition, when you're a digital person, you can miss the boat, right? If you're too slow on getting a consumer app out or whatever, you know, the market might have raced ahead. I suspect the cultural fit piece is a massive consideration.
I think 100%. But I think the other thing, that if you're moving from a larger organization to a smaller organization, that it's really important for a candidate to understand is that they're not going to be surrounded by the support mechanisms that a larger organization can bring to bear. So there are some huge advantages in terms of the ability to be nimble and drive rather than arguably respond to consumer demand. But you're not going to have all the support you might have in a big organization. So you're going to have to remember you need to go back and roll up your sleeves. You need to get your hands dirty. You need to get back on the tools. And so that's part of the balance there, is that if you still enjoy that part, it can be incredibly liberating all over again. But if you're, you know, if you don't think you can survive without your EA bringing you a cup of coffee in the morning, then jumping into a smaller organization probably isn't the one for you.
Yeah, fair enough. I wonder how big companies can convince themselves to sort of overcome this unconscious bias, though. And in some respects, it's a bit of a security blanket for them to hire somebody from an organization where they've done a very similar type of job that they're looking to recruit for. And taking a risk on someone with an entrepreneurial background is probably something that they're not willing to broach. So I wonder where that tipping point is. Any thoughts on that?
I think you're right. I think there is that concern. But I think there's also diversity in thinking is where the magic quite often happens. And, you know, just because you've got a lot of people who can wear a certain tie doesn't mean you need any more people that can wear a suit and tie. And sometimes you need the 10th man, if you like, that you need an alternative view on what that looks like. That you can definitely stimulate inside an organization, but you need to find the right balance, because you don't want to knock it off the rails either. I mean, there are some really interesting things that organizations have done around the world with kind of incubated innovation hubs or similar, that allows you the governance structure you would need for a large organization, but the ability to play a little bit more like you would in a smaller one, and with the funding to actually to make that play more effective as well. So I think it is an unusual approach, but I think finding the right balance there can add real value to both sides of an organization.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. So you were running a digital agency, and there's often bias again towards people moving from agency side to client side. How would you overcome that concern with prospective hiring companies wanted to hire someone from an agency rather than a client or another competitor?
And now, as a hiring manager, I would look for that diversity. Having worked both sides of the fence, I would look for it in a hire, because I think it absolutely adds value. And I think that rounded view of understanding both sides of how to take whatever it is to market, I think is an incredibly valuable thing to bring to the table. And very few people have it really at a senior level, because they have typically gone down an agency or a client side route. They're either working for a brand or they're working for agency. But even at a very senior level, there are a couple of good examples in the Southern Hemisphere here of people jumping out of agency land into CMO roles and doing a fine, fine job, because they bring a completely different perspective to something which needed that different perspective. Finding the right way to describe it to an employer as an asset rather than something that would detract. And that variety, sometimes that lack of linearity in your resume being a positive rather than a detractor, I think that's really important. I as a hiring manager, I said, I genuinely look for it now.
Yeah. And I think also, again, in my experience, it's not a one size fits all. You know, there's, you know, statistically, there may be fewer people hired from agency to go client side. But the reality is, there's some very good examples of people that have made a success of it is really what you're saying. And I'd completely agree. What about some of the characteristics of good digital entrepreneurs then? So you've touched on a few of them, such as curiosity, for example. What are the other things that you think run through the blood of good digital entrepreneurs?
Well, I think I agree with curiosity. I think I think there's a naturally intuitive mind, a higher than normal tolerance for risk, I think is always going to be the case in anybody who's entrepreneurial, but probably even more so in in a digital environment because of the speed of change and the pace of movement these days. An acceptance that you're going to fail, like a real tolerance for failure rather than a fear of failure. And I think there are certain cultures in the world, like in America, for example, in the US, failure seems to be much tolerated much more readily than maybe in the UK or certainly in Australia, where, you know, a failure on your resume can be a really bad thing. I think, you know, we need to embrace the ability to fail and move on quickly. And I think that's important. Or we're not going to push boundaries. And, you know, digital entrepreneurship is all about pushing boundaries. I don't think you necessarily need huge amounts of business acumen. We find that in the role I'm doing now, we work with lots of organizations, business owners in organizations who've started a business with very limited business acumen on the back of a real passion to achieve something. But, you know, you need to also understand, you know, where you might need to fill gaps in your knowledge and those unknown unknowns I talked about earlier. I remember an old creative director of mine from years and years ago jumped ship and set up his own agency with our blessing and actually one of our clients to kind of give him a bit of a leg up. And he phoned me a couple of months later and he went, "I have to pay income tax on my earnings." I went, "Yeah, I know." And he went, "Yeah, but it's my business." And I went, "Yeah, okay, come in and we'll have a chat and let's go over the things that you don't." But, you know, if you don't know them, you don't know them. And I think, you know, it's important that you have an acceptance. There are lots of things you're not going to know. And the other thing I think, particularly in the digital environment, is to be ideas led. For me, there's no such thing as a bad idea. It might not necessarily be its time, but it's not necessarily a bad idea. And ideas can come from anywhere in an organization. There is no one job title or hierarchical position that says you're better at or worse at ideas. They can come from any part of the organization. And I think embracing that kind of culture of innovation and accepting that those ideas can and should come from anywhere, I think is an incredibly valuable trait.
This point about being willing to fail, I think is really, really important. And I was chatting to a podcast guest a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about the explosion of online within the grocery retail space. And what was being discussed is there's no actual blueprint for digital in some categories. Of course, you know, digital's been around for a while. So of course there's experience and benefit, hindsight and all those sorts of things. But I think you've got to adopt a culture where you're willing to accept that failures, so long as they're not catastrophic failures, but failures are a way of learning and advancing quite quickly. And I bet, I think you talked about innovation centers or incubators, you know, those are the perfect sort of ground to sort of try new things. And I think that's what particularly companies that I'm seeing that are struggling to digitally transform, Rich. There's a lot of companies, I'm sure in Australia and certainly over here in the UK, that are really struggling and grappling with the idea of digital transformation. They know kind of that they've got to do it, but actually making it happen is so difficult. And I don't know where these statistics come from and how they drum them up, but they talk about 70% of digital transformations failing. So I completely agree. And I'm reading more and hearing more about that kind of appetite to fail and learn.
Yeah, and I think it's important that organizations embrace it and do it quickly, because there is the temptation in a transformation project to chase good money after bad, because you don't want to draw a line under it, write it off and move on, because, you know, there are pressures that come with that too. But I think it is important that organizations are very clear. I think digital transformations fail because people are expecting more from that transformation than they were ever going to achieve in the first place. So setting very clear objectives and milestones and stage gates on how you're going to get there, and being comfortable pulling a project or pulling a program or pulling a transformation at any one of those points, because the timing is wrong, the market has moved on, it's not going to deliver the benefits you thought it might as an organization. I think those are incredibly important. So they're not necessarily failing per se, but just not necessarily passing to the next gate.
Yeah, and I think psychologically that's a tough one though, isn't it? Because if you've spent an awful lot of money getting from point A to point B and you think, well, I'm never going to get to point C, pulling it, if you've spent a couple of mil or even a couple of hundred thousand or even tens of thousands on it, whatever currency you look at, Aussie dollars or sterling, that's a hard thing to do mentally, because I suppose it's an admission of failure. You've got to explain it to the boss if you're in a corporate environment, for example. So I absolutely hear you. So we talked about lots of companies wanting to move to the next phase, you know, and digitally transform. When you look out there in the digital world, what are you most excited about in terms of technology advances that you see happening that you think are real possibilities?
Short term, as you rightly said, we are both longer in the tooth. When digital technology started to enter the workplace, we were promised more time. We were promised that digitizing the workplace would actually would free us up to be able to think differently, would free us up to find that ubiquitous work-life balance that we've always been talking about, or been talking about for a number of years. And I actually think the last 6 or 7 months of the pandemic have actually accelerated that change, and in many respects forced that change into organizations that might not have been as comfortable with that kind of change. One of the short-term impacts of the pandemic has actually been to genuinely see what would the benefit of digital transformation across industry sectors and categories and individual organizations can achieve. And I don't see us dialing that back. So we have a number of conversations inside our organization and with the members we work with about, when will we go back to business as usual? And my premise on that will be we're never going back to business as it looked like in January and February of 2020. But we will go forward to a new version of whatever that looks like in 2021, 2022, which will be much more embracing of the way that digital is able to enhance business models. That the kind of hard stop of many organizations having to embrace that, and the benefits that that has brought to many organizations and many individuals within those organizations, I don't think is something we can turn off and we can go back to very readily. I also think it has actually created the opportunity to find work-life balance in a format that we probably hadn't predicted, but is something that lots of people seem to want to embrace. The concept of hybrid working is the one that you tend to hear much more readily now, in that people have found some elements of working remotely are really beneficial and some elements of working in the office are really beneficial, but you don't necessarily have to do one or the other. You can find the right way of blending that and being in the right place for an activated workspace. And I think that will continue to be digitally led. If you want one big weird prediction, I've never really been sold on the concept of wearable technology, because it has kind of been an extension of your mobile device. But I think somebody will find a utility to move us to skip wearables in many respects and jump straight into an implanted technology. And somebody will come up with something somewhere where millions of us around the world will go, I am happy for that to be embedded in my ear, finger, wherever it might be. And all of a sudden we'll go, absolutely, we'll shift to this kind of cyborg living arrangement pretty quickly, because the utility of it will offset the risk. And I think that will be the next thing, as the technology and human and technology interfaces become almost the same thing.
I have to concede, my wife does thoroughly dislike my Apple Watch, because every time it buzzes on my wrist, I look at it. But that's probably my sort of addiction to digital as much as anything else. But yeah, I don't disagree. And I think, some of the things you talked about there were about culture and how that might change, and how the COVID world has created this more dispersed working pattern. And how do you think that has dampened creativity? Because, you've worked in sectors that are all about come up with ideas, innovating, people that aren't physically in the same room. How does that impact on their ability to be creative?
It's a really good question, because we're actively struggling with that right now, in terms of a hybrid nature of having some people in a room and some people remotely, versus everybody remotely or everybody in a room. And depending on the nature of various lockdowns in different parts of the country, different parts of the world, that is or isn't possible. Inherently, I would say that it's easier to be creative as a team if you're all in the same place. And you can bounce off body language, you can kick things around, you can talk over each other much more readily without being rude in a physical environment than you can on Zoom. But I'm not 100% convinced that's just not my bias to the way I've always done things coming into play. We are all distinctly more comfortable on camera than we were 7 months ago, no question. We're all more comfortable having a range of different conversations in this kind of environment than we ever were before. I think technology will get better in terms of helping us work more collaboratively in more remote areas. I don't see business travel going back to the way it was 6-7 months ago. I don't see anybody getting on a flight or driving 5 hours for a 1-hour meeting anymore. I just don't see that ever dialing back. So I think we're going to have to, as a group, think about how we can develop this way of working that is about creative solutioning and ideation in a remote environment. And I think that somebody, it's probably going to be a Zoom or a Microsoft through Teams, are going to come up with some really cute ways of allowing us to do that in a remote environment that mimic better that kind of creative process in a room.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in many respects, whilst, some people regard digital transformation and definition of digital transformation as completely regenerating your business, completely new business model, but lots of companies have gone through something of a digital transformation in terms of how they physically work with each other. And if, again, both old enough to remember the size of the hardware that you needed 10, 15 years ago to run a video conference call between London and Sydney, as we're doing today. Although we're on desktops here, I mean, all you really need is a mobile phone each, and the slickness and quality of the technology is so streamlined these days. It's forced people to evolve in a matter of 6 months, really, that perhaps would have taken them 2 or 3 years previously.
Oh, absolutely, no question. And I think the other thing from a recruitment perspective is it absolutely democratizes where you live. It's not important that you live within an hour's drive or an hour's commute of work anymore. I think, you know, one of the things that this has taught us is that, and will continue to be the case, I believe, going forwards, is that you should work. I'm stealing the quote, I can't remember who I stole it from, but work is something you do, not a place you go to, is, I think, something which will continue ad infinitum into the future. And, you know, maybe you'll need to be in the office, you know, once every now and again. If what you do typically is office related, there are going to be huge chunks of that you can do from anywhere, not just from your home, but from a beach in the case of us here in Sydney, or a cafe in other parts of the world, which means you can work within the context of that activated workspace rather than I have to be here, which means you have almost all of a sudden the flexibility to hire the best people at the right price, no matter where they are in the country or arguably in the world. Because if you can have remote, if we can find better ways of doing this remote working, which we're all getting better at, no question, then I can work for any business anywhere.
Back to the entrepreneurialism theme, because that was a really interesting kind of conversation about culture as well. But back to the entrepreneurial theme, looking back in your time of starting businesses and, you know, that wonderful benefit of hindsight, what just if you were to pick a couple of things, I'm sure you've had this question umpteen times from people, but if you were to pick a couple of things that you would have done differently, which would be a good tip to someone contemplating starting their own digital business, what couple of things might you pick out?
I think there's a couple of practical things. Make sure you're well capitalized, or if you're going to bootstrap it, you know, you're well funded personally in some way, shape or form. To get the basics right, make sure you're comfortable and make sure you're not going to worry about those kind of things. Cash flow kills more businesses than anything else. And, you know, I'm not telling anybody anything they didn't know there, but it's not until you get into a cash squeeze do you realize how much of a pressure that can put on an organization. One of the things I didn't do, or certainly with the first few businesses, it was create advisory boards. I would definitely recommend that, particularly in a digital environment, that you reach out to build not boards of directors per se, but an advisory board that can really help you kind of chart and navigate through the unknown, particularly within a digital or tech related environment, because there's always things you don't know. And again, you know, leaning on people's wider expertise, I think, is incredibly valuable. And lots of people who have started and built successful businesses are very happy to help young businesses develop and grow, because they remember what it was like when they were there too, and they're very, more often than not, they're very happy to put back in. And the other thing I would suggest is ask people for help. If you're asking people who have been there before, or even people who haven't been there before, and you start with the concept of I really need some help, it's really hard for somebody to say no. And in actual fact, most people don't want to say no. They want to impart their expertise and help, and you don't have to know it all, and you're not supposed to know it all. And the more you ask for help, the more you are, I think, giving yourself the chance of succeeding. And every year your business continues to operate and continues to get more successful, increases the chances that you will remain successful, because the business failure rates drop dramatically after 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years of trading. So, you know, reach out, ask people for help.
And final question for me, Rich, is just really around that switch from entrepreneur and into a corporate environment, because of course you went through an earnout with your business. And so the acquiring company, you were with them for 4 or 5 years, was it?
Yeah, it was a 3-year earnout deal, and I stayed for a couple more.
Yeah. How did that feel?
Oh, look, I think actually it was very comfortable. In all honesty, the organizer, I think that's another thing. If you're going to sell a business, find the right buyer. So particularly if you're going to be there for a while, find an organization you believe that you can culturally fit into. But the chap I was reporting to is still a mate a few years further on from when I left the organization, because we got on really well. We had very similar views on business. We had very similar views on running businesses. So it was a very comfortable, very easy relationship. And actually, I think I probably stayed client side because I was comfortable with that transition again back into that environment, because the culture of the organization I joined was pretty similar to the one that I had been running. And I think probably, again, that point I made earlier about you being a better executive if you run your own business helps, because you have a better understanding of what everybody else is doing and why they're doing it. So you don't get frustrated by the things that you don't understand quite so much, because you don't understand the nuances of it all, but you do understand how it fits together better.
Yeah, great stuff. Well, listen, I really appreciate your time today. It's been an interesting conversation, and certainly from someone who's just started up his own business, I'm certainly hearing a lot of interesting themes there that I can relate to. So, look, really appreciate you being part of the Digital Careers podcast, and all the very best for the rest of this year and beyond.
Thanks, guys. My pleasure. And likewise, best of luck with the business.
My thanks to Rich Spencer for joining me today. I hope you enjoyed the discussion and that it's given you some helpful advice if you're thinking about striking it out on your own in the digital world, or indeed moving from entrepreneur to working for someone else. Rich's thoughts on companies hiring entrepreneurs were also, I thought, very balanced. And there's clearly some opportunities to bring fresh thinking for companies looking to digitally transform. Thank you for listening, and please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform or watch the full-length video on the knowledge section of bartonrock.com.